Of More Outdoors, broadcasting today from the Log Cabin in Fontainebleau Park. Glad to have you with us for the next 2 hours. We're going to be getting several duck hunting reports from duck hunters out in the blinds. It's the opening day of the second split in Louisiana. In addition to that, coming up in about 20 minutes or so, we're going to have Jonathan Bordelon, Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, deer biologist, giving us the latest on chronic wasting disease, an update on the CWD situation, what the state of Louisiana is going to be doing to protect us from having it come in. It's on all sides of us. It's been located in Texas and Arkansas to the north, 4 instances in Mississippi, some of those fairly close to the Louisiana state line. And some folks are getting alarmed. Some folks are not really taking this very seriously. I've talked to other states where it's been there for years, and they say it's going to play out, and it's no big deal. Alabama is taking it very seriously. In fact, they are one of the first states that I've heard about actually writing citations for people who are transporting deer into the state of Alabama. I was there recently, and I can tell you they have an extensive public awareness campaign going on with billboards on all of the major interstate entrances and coming into the state of Alabama to warn people about it. And they say they're going to take it seriously. I've got some quotes from them. We'll share that with you a little bit later on, because we're going to be talking to Keith Lusher, a host of the North Shore Fishing Report, as well as Wendy Billiott, the president of our Louisiana Outdoor Writer Association, doing the Hunt Fish Talk segment from 8 to 9 and talking about CWD extensively. Also on my webpage at DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com, it's the subject of our outdoor opinion poll. How seriously do you take CWD, chronic wasting disease, as a threat to the whitetail population? We're also talking ducks, though, and let's go to talk to Darren Digby. He's out there in the marshes trying to put a few birds in the bag. Let's see how he's doing so far. Darren, good morning.
Hey, Don, good morning.
Darren, where are you hunting this morning?
We are in Delacroix, where I'm often am. Watching a few birds working right now, but so far we haven't even thought about pulling the trigger.
Oh, wow. That's depressing. You know, here it is, opening day of
the
split. And,
that's,
you know,
right,
the birds should have had a rest, and we had some weather to bring more birds in. And to hear that, just, I don't know, just doesn't make sense.
What do you think it is?
Is it a lack of feed, too much pressure? What do you think?
Well, and in this particular area, there's very little pressure. I mean, there's not a hunter within 1,000 yards of us. Which for Delacroix standards is usually there's 3 hunters within, you know, such a radius. I really don't know. You know, we came out yesterday to brush blinds, and there was none holding on our property, but a few, you know, here and there in the periphery. But for the first 40 minutes or so since shooting time this morning, I didn't see a duck. And, I mean, that's just depressing, you know.
Are you hearing any shots in the distance?
There's a few valleys here and there, but again, it's a split opener with really good weather.
Right.
I mean, come on, you know. Mm-hmm. And actually, with today's particular wind direction being kind of west southwest, it's coming from an area that should be pretty strong. You know, more traditionally strong areas of Delacroix, and there's nothing coming from that direction at all. So. I don't know. I haven't got to hear any of your other reports this morning, but for us here, from our vantage point, it's pretty poor.
Is the table set? I mean, is there feed in the area where you're hunting?
No, not really. This area we got beat up pretty good in October. It was fine after the first little storm we had in the summer, or earlier in the summer, but when we had that one skirt in October, the big one that went to Florida, it mm-hmm. kind of put a pretty good wallop on these outer Delacroix marshes. You know, some of the more protected ponds held their feed, but there's very little.
Yeah, well, that certainly has a lot to contribute to it. Darren, if you would, Doug's going to put you on hold, and we're going to check in with Chris Pike. He's not hunting far from you. Let's see if he's got some better news than you did, and I hope things change for you. And thanks for that
sure,
report.
Thanks. Yep.
All right, let's go to Chris Pike now. He's hunting over in that pretty much a similar area. Chris, are you down in Delacroix or closer to Carnarvon? Hey, Chris, are you in the Delacroix, Carnarvon area? I see if we can get Chris
on. Can you hear me?
I think we got him now. Yeah, Chris.
You got me?
Are you in Delacroix, Carnarvon?
I'm in Delacroix. I'm right off the Pencil Canal, kind of towards Point Fiend area.
Okay, I know exactly where you are. I don't know if you heard Darren's report, but boy, it's pretty bleak. He's hunting down there in Delacroix too.
Yeah, man, I don't know what's going on this morning. Birds all week, a lot of ducks. You know, I was getting a lot of negative reports, but I can tell you this, man, there's not many birds in the marsh. They're all on open water. Further south, but they're all on open water grass flats. I don't know why they're doing this early. The water's not, you know, low enough to get them out the marsh yet, but you know, I think they're just educated somehow pretty quick. But like I said, all week there's been a lot of ducks, but like I said, they're further out and they're on the open water, so it's a whole different scenario than we should have right now. But we're seeing very little this morning. I'm not seeing those rafts moving off the big water that I saw all week.
So you know, this weather system that moved in earlier this week was kind of strange in the fact that it came up from the southwest, and the winds are continuing southwest. I don't recall very many times when you get a passage of a front, you get wind, you get rain. It normally switches to the west for a short period of time and then goes either north or back to south and southeast. This has been kind of persistent southwest. Do you think that's got anything to do with it?
I think for sure. I think it'll you know, push those birds right up to the north again like they do with the northern wind coming from up top. You know, I think they probably push back up a little further. You know, all in all, even during the week, you know, we saw some good amount of birds, but nothing like we should. I mean, as far as, you know, widespread, they're concentrated. There's just not widespread numbers. And I guess they might have, you know, held up north a little bit or moved back north a little bit. But yeah, southwest wind for us is not good. I'd rather a south wind or something out the southeast. We tend to shoot more ducks on, but this is a tough one.
Yeah, well, just like fishing, a west wind isn't good for much, you know, in some areas, but yeah. Most areas you get a west wind, it's not good. Well, Chris, yeah, I hope things change for you today, and of course, as always, you know how duck hunting can be. I mean, it might be great tomorrow and the next couple days, but it's just really surprising that it's that slow on this opening day of the second split.
Yeah, and you know, the crazy part is that I don't think it's just us. You know, I mean, you know, this is one of the most consistent areas in Louisiana, and from the reports I got this week, that it's not like, you know, they're all in one area or all downriver or in Arkansas. It's just I don't know where they're at. You know, it's crazy, but they'll show up. They'll be here.
Now, what do you do on a day like today? Weather's not brutal out there. How long will you give it before you finally hang it up and head in?
I kind of judge on the area I'm hunting. I'm in more of a salt marsh down here, so it's, you know, a lot more big ducks. So usually I'll wait for the 9 o'clock gray duck flight. About 9:30 is about all I'll probably give it. You know, I just kind of read it day by day. If I'm further towards Carnarvon where it's all teal, you know, I'll probably pack it up about 8:30, 9 at the latest. So we'll see, man. I got to get these guys on something. We'll have to make up for it on the fishing end if the ducks don't want to move.
Yeah. How's the fishing been?
It's been good. The red fishing's still phenomenal. It's been about 3-4 weeks now that it's been pretty good. And the trout are still absent. You know, I don't know what the deal is. I know we got a lot of fresh water on this side, but they should be more towards the Hopedale Marsh. And they just – there's a few over there, but I don't know, man. I'm not seeing many trout at all. Redfish are pretty easy. They're all Grand Lake, you know, Point Fiend, Lake Patola, all the wintertime low water areas. So it's been great. We've been catching them nonstop. So we got them to fall back on today for sure.
Well, Chris, good luck to you. Hope those birds decide to make a move inland to you and you end up getting some action today. And we'll keep checking back with you. Thanks for the report, as always. We appreciate it. If somebody wants to get a hold of you and set up a trip, you know, either fishing, hunting, or fishing and hunting, tell them how to get you.
Yep. Best way is my website. It's LACastAndBlast.com, or my phone number is 504-427-4973.
All right, Chris, thanks again. We appreciate it, and we'll talk with you later.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
All right, when we come back after this break, we're going to go up north, Stuttgart, Arkansas. Roland Cortez is hunting up there, and find out if, in fact, the ducks are north of here, or if they're not there, where the heck are they? That's the big question this morning. We'll be right back with that, more field reports. Also, Jonathan Bordelon's going to join us and talk more about CWD, chronic wasting disease in white-tailed deer and other cervids. We'll be right back after this. All right, so far it's been kind of a, disappointing opening day of the second split from some of our field reporters. Ryan Lambert didn't sound too excited. Birds not moving down there near the mouth of the river. We had just talked to a couple of hunters in the Delacroix-Carnarvon area, Captain Chris Pike, Captain Darren Digby, and Darren is really down. He's not saying he's seeing hardly any birds at all. Haven't pulled the trigger. Chris saying they're going to stick it out a little while and see if maybe some bigger ducks start to move when it gets a little bit later in the morning. Let's find out if maybe they're north of those guys. Roland Cortez joins us now. He's hunting up in the Stuttgart, Arkansas area. Roland, tell us, give us the scenario. What type of habitat are you hunting in today?
Good morning, Don. We're hunting a flooded rice field this morning, a little bit west of town this morning.
And how's it been so far? Are you seeing a lot of birds? Have y'all taken any shots yet?
We've seen a lot of ducks coming out of the south today. a lot of birds, you know, coming out of the south with this kind of a north wind we got, which is kind of crazy. But we've got one duck this morning. It's just, you know, we got a lot of rain yesterday. We got about 4 inches of rain yesterday, so a lot of these fields that didn't have water are flooded and kind of scattered the ducks that we do have around. But we are seeing a lot of high ducks coming out of the south today.
Yep, that'll happen when you get a lot of rain on those fields. It definitely will scatter them. I heard you just do a little bit of speckle belly calling. Or somebody did. Are y'all seeing some specks down there?
We are seeing a good bit of specks. We didn't kill none yet this morning. It's, like I said, it's a little slow this morning. But I had a good week early this week. We shot a bunch of mallards and some specks. But like I said, there's just we haven't had any cold weather up here. And it's almost such and t-shirt weather up here. So it's kind of got things a little stirred up, you know.
Have you talked to any of the timber hunters, the flooded timber hunters? Have they done anything?
Man, it's been, you know, fast or slow up here, Don. You know, there's some places have a good bit of ducks and then some don't, you know, but the timber hunting, some places, like I said, have been doing really good and then some places haven't. It just all depends, you know, the ducks are kind of congregated in certain places, the reports I'm getting.
Mm-hmm. And what are you hearing from back down closer to home in Louisiana?
Pretty much, you know, slow. I mean, from what I'm getting back home, they've seen a lot of ducks during the week before the season opened. And now, you know, this morning, it's, you know, they ain't really had very many shots fired as far as I can get from the touches I've got from this morning.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. Everybody's scratching their head, you know, and we knew this wasn't going to be a banner year, but certainly I think people expected more than what we got.
You know, like I said, up here, it's been fair to, you know, to steady, but it's just not what we're used to up here, and a lot of the ducks are still to the north of us.
You know, and how late does that Arkansas season continue?
It goes all the way to the end of January 26th or 27th. You know, it lasts almost to the end of the last weekend of the month.
Yeah, so we got a lot of time to go.
Yeah, we're hoping that, you know, the ducks show up, you know, in January. But, you know, a lot of times they gotta come through here to go to Louisiana.
That's right. Well, Roland, best of luck to you. I hope things pick up and you guys get some birds. In the meantime, if somebody wants to check out some of the hunting area where you are, how do they reach you?
Don, they can look us up on Facebook at Arkansas County Duck Guide Service. They can look us up on the web, AR County Guide Service, or they can contact me at 985-414-4997.
All right, Roland, thank you so much. We appreciate your
report. Thank you, Don.
All right, there he goes. Roland Cortez, hunting up in the Stuttgart, Arkansas area. All right, from there, let's jump over and talk to Blake Swallow and find out where he's hunting over in the Catahoula area. Blake, where are you hunting this morning?
Don, good morning. We're actually on a private farm a little bit, I guess you would tell you, east of Catahoula Lake this morning.
You know, I got the Wildlife and Fisheries flyover report, and they said that the water level had dropped up there, which, you know, was causing a little bit of difficulty, but said more rain brought it back up. It's back up around 6 foot. Is that accurate?
Yeah, this morning we're about 7.5 feet above where we normally are for this time of the year. So all the rain north of us is coming down the Red River, is keeping everything from exiting the lake, and Black River, everything's high. So it's holding water on our watershed. So got a lot of ducks, though, but we just have a lot of water.
Yep, scatters them out. It's also reporting a real high incidence of the divers, many more divers than what's normally up there.
Yeah, we have a lot of scalp this year, which we normally don't have. We have a lot of ringnecks typically every year and canvasbacks, but this year we have a lot of scalp, so that's it's added to it.
So your decision to hunt that area where you are, what type of blind are you hunting in over there?
We're in a pit this morning. We're in a pit this morning on an edge of a harvested soybean field. And on the backside of it, we've got a moist soil management little reserve that we have about 10 acres on the backside of it. There's lots of ducks this morning. We've seen all kinds, teal, gray ducks, a lot of mallards, ringnecks, a lot of ducks today.
Well, that's good news that you're seeing that many birds, because some of the other reports we're getting down south, man, are just really pretty bleak.
No, I've got some gentlemen actually hunting with me from down south. They've been hunting around the Venice area lately, and mm-hmm. It's not been very good. And we're very encouraged on what we're seeing this morning.
Yeah, when ducks don't show up in Venice, I don't know what to say. I mean, that has traditionally, for time immemorial, has been a waterfowl haven. And, you know, to have people going down there and making bad hunts just doesn't make sense. I don't know. I mean, we had a little bit of a storm surge, and it killed some of the fresh vegetation there, but a lot of it's still there. And I don't know. It's just puzzling. You know, and these systems that we're getting, the southwest wind system, it seems like it probably is going to benefit the north part better than the south. And, you know, normally you get those fronts, and that wind comes howling out of the west and northwest and then due north, but this one didn't do that.
No, it seems like we are doing better on the days when we get a south wind, and even a southwest wind is even better. So this morning it's warm, and it's not very comfortable in the blind today, but we're seeing lots of ducks, and it's encouraging because we haven't seen this in the last week and a half. These birds must have got here the last couple of days.
Well, that's good. Let's hope they keep coming. How about the geese? Are you seeing any geese around?
Yeah, quite a few geese on the north part of the farm. We had a lot of snows. We shot a few snows during the 2 weeks that we were off, that we were closed for the conservation, and more speckled bellies than we saw the first split. First split, we were really shy of our speckled bellies. We didn't have a lot of them here. I know in North Louisiana and some places around Kaplan, I talked to some people that were killing them, but some traditional places didn't do very well on them as well. So, but they're coming in now. I think we're going to be fine. I think everything's just a little late this year, Don.
Yeah. Well, you know, the name of your operation is Full Strap and Stringers, so let's talk about the stringers part of it. How has all that water affected your fishing? Has it improved it?
No,
or
not at all.
It's
been very good, Don. Our fishing's been very good. Our shackleway fishing's been very, very consistent. Average anywhere from 40 to 65 fish for two people for a half a day trip. Some days you catch better fish, and some days you catch smaller fish, but the fish are biting. They're schooled up around the shed, and they're getting into the deeper holes, and so it's been encouraging.
Well, there's a lot of ways to fish for white perch. What is the best method y'all employ? What do you use to catch them?
Well, it depends on the time of the year, Don. This time of the year, we're really what's called spider rigging. We're putting five or six rods on the front of the boat, five or six on the back, drifting along, watching for the balls of shed, and trying to stay as close to them as we can, and the perch come in and out of the shed and feed, so that's good. A little bit later, even if we get five or six warm days, those fish will start to want to move off on the first ledges. So we'll start fishing with a popping cork, with a jig, or maybe a shiner to find them, and then a jig once we find them. So it kind of depends. But I would say for this time of the year, we're fishing deeper water, either with corks or spider rigging. And 3 or 4 days of warm weather, we're moving up on the first ledge and even into 2 and 3 feet of water, because those old males will try to get up there and start beating it up a little bit, waiting for the females.
And how long does that run continue up there on those white perch?
Our best fishing on the spawning fish is going to be your February. It's going to be your March and April weeks of the full moon and the week after the full moon. Right now, we're doing really good, like I say, on the deeper fish, but the spawning fish will be in March and April around the full moon.
And I guess that is primarily, the moon certainly has an effect, but the water temperature too.
Sure, sure, yeah. The moon is what we've always said they set their spawn by. But if the temperature is not correct, then you won't have it. I've seen them spawn up here in February if we get 5 or 6 days and the temperature comes up to where it needs to be. But typically, if you want to plan a trip, you want to look at the full moon time in March and the full moon time in April.
Isn't it a shame you can't get the best of both? You know, schedule a trip when the waterfowl's at the peak and also the white perch.
Yeah,
they're good separately, but not together. Different times of the year.
Yeah, it seems to be that way. But like I say, I mean, just day before yesterday, two gentlemen came up and they fished before they hunted this morning. And 2 days, I mean, they kept 110, so that's pretty good.
Whew, that's some great eating, too. Oh, love those white perch. That may be my favorite. Well, Blake, if somebody wants to get a gift certificate, and it doesn't have to be used this year. You know, they could give it to them and use it next year for either fishing or hunting or fishing and hunting and lodging. Tell them how to get a hold of you.
They can look us up on Facebook, Full Strap and Stringer, or go to our website, fullstrapandstringer.com. And if they need if they have a question or something, they'd like to talk to me directly on particulars, 318-730-8809.
All righty. Hope you guys limit out today, and we'll be checking back with you from time to time. Thanks so much for the report.
Have a great day, Don.
All righty. Blake Swallow, Full Strap and Stringer is the name of it. You can check it out online or on Facebook or give him a call. All right. We are going to be talking to Jonathan Bordelon in just a few minutes about the CWD, keeping it out of Louisiana. Will the state be taking any new precautions or new regulations? Kind of recoup the latest regulations on what has been in effect. And it was a change made in it. It was a little bit more stringent, and then they kind of relaxed it as far as what you can bring into the state. Also, we're going to talk about it in the 8 to 9 o'clock hour among some other outdoor writers. And I want to give you some of the quotes from Alabama. They wrote 6 citations for hunters that were bringing back field-dressed deer into Alabama from other states, and they say they're going to continue to do that. Their state agency is a little bit disappointed in that some people just simply don't really care. They don't think it matters, and when they were asked about it. But other states take very, very strict precautions and take it very seriously. In some states, the people I've talked to in other states where it's been there for a long time said, it's no big deal, you know, and have no intention of stopping hunting or curtailing hunting or whatever. Anyway, Jonathan Bordelon, right after this break, will be joining us. He is the wildlife and fisheries deer biologist who has kind of spearheaded this whole study and research and implementing the regulations on CWD and how to keep it out of Louisiana. We'll get his take on what the very latest is and all that. Plus, we'll get some more duck hunters coming back, too, next half hour. You're listening to it on More Outdoors. I'm Don Dubuque. Good Saturday morning from the Log Cabin in Fountain Blue State Park. We'll be right back. And welcome back into More Outdoors. Jonathan Bordelon, deer biologist with Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, joins us. Jonathan, good morning, and thanks, as always, for taking time out to talk with us about this CWD situation. We appreciate it.
Good morning, Don. Thanks for having me on.
As always, there's always somebody who doesn't get the memo or is totally unfamiliar with CWD. If you could, give us a brief description of what this disease is.
Okay. Just real briefly, chronic wasting disease is a fatal neurological disease of members of the deer family. It leads to complete loss of functions and eventual death. However, it's a slow progressing disease. It typically takes 18 months before the animal becomes symptomatic. And while animals can spread it to one another, another big threat is the carcass of the animal, where the disease will persist and live. So if those carcasses are moved, the disease can be moved along with them. And to take it a step further, the carcasses, if improperly disposed of or placed into the environment, eventually can contaminate that environment, because after the carcass decomposes and melts down, that infectious agent simply binds to soil particles and even could be taken up by plants. So it's possible to move the disease in numerous ways, and that's what makes the disease a little bit different from many others.
And, of course, it affects cervids, which includes elk and moose and any of the hoofed animals in addition to white-tailed deer. How widespread is it right now? How many states has it been detected in?
It's in 25 states at this time. In the latest state to become positive was Mississippi. Mississippi now has 4 positives, 2 of which are in East Sequoia County, folks that aren't familiar with where East Aquinnah County is, it's basically, it's adjacent to Louisiana. If you're looking at the Louisiana map or familiar with the city of Tallulah, it would be due east of Tallulah, so very close to home.
All right, so in, it's there, it's in Arkansas, it's been found, and also in Texas, so we are kind of surrounded here in Louisiana, and regulations were put in to help prevent the spread of it into Louisiana. If you would just kind of go over the current regulation for transporting carcasses from out of state into Louisiana.
Currently, there's a carcass importation restriction, and what that restriction states is that no carcasses can be brought into Louisiana. However, there are some exceptions, and the exceptions include deboned meat, quarters that have no part of the spinal column or head attached, meat that is packaged, also the cape of the animal. In addition to that, clean skulls or clean skull caps with antlers, all of those things are allowed.
Now, it was my understanding that you and maybe some of the other biologists with the department just attended a summit or a conference with regard to CWD. Is that accurate?
That's correct. A little over a week ago, we were able to attend a symposium that was held in the state of Texas. And at that particular symposium, there were researchers who actually spent most of their career studying that disease from states such as Wyoming, which has had the disease for more than 40 years now. Or at least diagnosed the disease for more than 40 years now, including other states such as Wisconsin, where the disease has reached 40% and 50% prevalence in some counties of their state. So it was great to be able to hear some of the work and research that's been done by those folks, as well as those resource agencies who've been tasked with not only managing deer in those states, but also managing the disease.
So what did you come away with that was significant that's been applied in other states in either attitudes or regulations that you think may be appropriate for Louisiana?
Really the focus in those states, the folks that have had some of the best success or at least have minimized spread have been folks who have taken early action, meaning taking steps that would keep deer from commingling with one another. Do whatever it takes basically to limit the spread or movement of carcasses on that landscape. So basically to enlist best management practices and more or less add teeth to those with regulation. Because in the absence of any action at all, such as in a state like Wyoming, where it likely was detected while it was likely there long in advance of detection, simply because no one was testing for it, it got a foothold, and now you have counties within those states where it's 40-50% prevalence. In the long term, what that has done is it actually has led to declines in populations. So it has decreased cervid populations in their state, and it's also obviously adversely affected hunters and their willingness to consume or eat meat. And, you know, that being said, when it's one positive in a county and they don't find another one for years, you know, hunter attitudes are like, well, doesn't seem like a big deal. But no one's thinking about what about in 40 years or 50 years? How about in 100 years? This disease is going to likely outlast, you know, certainly our careers and even our lives. And it's something that future generations will have to contend with. So with that in mind, everything you can do early on to detect and then hopefully limit the spread is very important, because once you get to those grim numbers, such as a 40% or 50% prevalence, at that point it is having population level impacts, and hunter attitudes on hunting and eating meat at that point, when it's a coin flip of whether a deer is going to be positive or not, certainly that at that point it seems to definitely affect hunter participation and hunter willingness to pursue and harvest and consume those game. And it's not every hunter, but it certainly the numbers start to creep up when you approach those levels.
Did you talk to any scientists or biologists who have taken a little bit different attitude in that they're joining? And I talked to hunters in other states. I was recently up in South Dakota a couple of weeks ago, and they said, oh, it's been here for a long time. And just like you say, they've got this laissez-faire attitude that it's no big deal. It's been here. It's not going to really affect us. Is there anyone in the science field that believes that you've talked to, that maybe we shouldn't just ignore. That'll take care of itself and go away?
Certainly. There are folks who say it's been here a long time and it's been here all along and it's just another disease. And with that, you know, you're going to have some populations that'll cope with it. And since it is a slow progressing disease, animals often will have a chance to at least reproduce a time or two before they would potentially be infected and succumb to the disease, that it is no big deal. But I think some of that is really coming from looking at it at a real short window. Folks that are in states that maybe haven't had the disease for decades, certainly not 40 or 50 years, such as in Wyoming, have that impression like, well, it's not really that bad. It's in a small percentage of the animals. It's still in a small percentage of the animals. But the only caution I would give to that rationale is in time, the disease has shown a growth in prevalence and eventual spread if left unchecked. So that it's the time is what we're concerned with. And certainly in the short term, it's probably not going to ravage a state and lead to rapid declines. It's not going to be something that you'll see in a year, 10 years, or maybe even 20 years. Maybe something that'll take a few more decades before it manifests itself to the level at which it has those impacts. However, once you're there and you can't go back. So obviously everything you can do on the front end to be at least proactive and try to prevent spread and increase in prevalence, then those are definitely worthwhile management tactics and strategies to at least afford yourself more time because the future and future research, it could unlock new possibilities. Obviously, if you have populations or you have a state where you have a few positives or they're isolated to a small portion of your state, you're going to be in a lot better shape if there's new management options or treatments down the road. Currently, there is no treatment for the disease, but there's a tremendous amount of research being done looking at that. So,
well, that being said, that there's been, because of this expansion of it, more and more states are putting more effort into doing research and doing studies on it. And can you tell us from the latest information that you got, do you see anything changing in Louisiana? Or is the carcass ban and its present form, is that sufficient? Or are we going to step up testing or maybe step up more stringent regulations or increase enforcement? What can we expect in Louisiana to see now that it's been identified not too far from the border in Mississippi?
Right. Well, definitely a step up in testing. That is something that we're really focused on at this time. And it's not just how many samples that we can collect. Obviously, the more samples, the better. However, it's the type of samples. And I'll real quick story for Mississippi. We look at the four positives that they have. They've collected a tremendous number of hunter-harvested samples, thousands. However, they have one positive from those hunter-harvested samples. Mississippi, just like Louisiana, will respond to neurologic deer calls or deer that are just not acting the way they're supposed to. Maybe they're not running off. Maybe they're walking around in a circle. Maybe they've been standing out in a field for 2 days with their head down, drooping, not moving. Well, those are animals that both Mississippi and Louisiana, many other states, will respond to. Will actually collect those animals and test them. And it's important of the four positives they have, two of those positives came from such animals. So it was animals that were neurologic and showing signs. And then the fourth animal, the most recent animal they picked up, was roadkills. And that's something in Louisiana that we're looking, our staff is tasked with collecting. We may not remove the deer, but they'll simply remove the samples needed. Sometimes those carcasses are in pretty rough shape, but they're able to at least get the sample from them in addition to responding to those neurologic animals. And we are collecting hunter-harvested samples, but we don't want to put our eggs in that basket alone. Obviously, those neurologic, those sick deer, those are target animals. Those are the ones we want to respond to. And that's where the public can help us. They can report a deer that's just not acting the way a deer should act. Deer that is walking around, wandering in a circle, standing out there with its head lowered and its ears drooped. It's there for a period of time. That isn't normal. And hunters are keyed in on those types of things. They know when something doesn't look the way it's supposed to look. And those are the type of animals that we definitely would like to get calls on and like to get samples from in order to test for the disease. And that's what many other states have focused on. We call it target animals. And those target animals are both roadkill and sick deer. And we're really, with our staff, it's become a priority and a response. Whereas in the past, it was something that we did, but it wasn't placed at such a high priority as which it is now. So it's more or less all hands on deck when those types of calls come in. So that's more or less what we have done. Carcass ban at this point, we did extend it to Louisiana lands east of the Mississippi River in the parishes of East Carroll, Madison, and Tinson. What some folks may not realize is that the river itself is not the state line in those particular parishes in adjacent Mississippi counties. It's based on historic river channels. So there is a few parcels of property, approximately 30-plus thousand acres, along the Mississippi River that actually falls east of the river itself. And those have been included in the cervid carcass ban for obvious reasons, since they're in close proximity to known positives in Mississippi, and there is no barrier at all in the landscape between those. We went ahead and amended the cervid carcass regulation earlier this year to include those particular properties, but otherwise everything else is the same. And one more story in regard to the cervid carcass importation ban, and it is somewhat encouraging, even though it was a tiny sample size. We got calls this year, which are never calls you want to receive, but we got calls from both Arkansas and Texas from their agencies. CWD is a reportable disease, so it has to be reported. So it's not something that just the hunter's made aware of. It's something that agencies, various agencies, are made aware of, both state and federal. And we received calls that a hunter harvested deer from Arkansas was brought back into Louisiana by a hunter, and the same for Texas. So we did at that time. The hunters had already been notified by the respective states, and those respective states had also notified us. And we contacted those hunters. They were aware that they were in possession of a deer that had chronic wasting disease at the time of harvest. So in both cases, we asked the hunters if they would be willing to forfeit the venison. We would simply pick it up, incinerate it, then bag the ash and place in a landfill. In both cases, they were very compliant. They gave us the meat, at which time all of the meat had been packaged, but which the point of the story I wanted to get to is both hunters, even though it's a tiny sample size, were aware of the cervid carcass importation regulations, partly because the states they hunted in, Texas and Arkansas, had them even in advance of Louisiana. So they were used to having to do something. The fact that Louisiana joined the group, that was an easy transition for them. But they were actually in compliance of the law. The gentleman in Texas had actually returned to Louisiana, and he had had his deer caped in Texas. And, man, that was so refreshing to know that he had actually returned with the skull and antlers cap along with that cape that he had done in Texas. The rest of the meat he had was just that. It was just meat that was brought back and packaged. Same with the gentleman in Arkansas. He deboned his meat anyhow. So, you know, in both cases, they were in compliance. They were aware of the regulation. And the meat was gathered, incinerated, and the ash was bagged and burned. So while it's a tiny sample size, those are the only two deer that we know of since we've had this cervid carcass regulation. It is very refreshing that in both cases, not only were the hunters aware, but they were also compliant in that regulation. So tiny sample size again, but somewhat refreshing.
Well, Alabama hasn't been so fortunate. They've had written some citations, and the people that were written citations said they were completely aware of it, and they just didn't think it was that big of a deal. So that's a little bit alarming. That being said, in a perfect world, it would be great if everybody, you know, puts forth the extra effort needed to keep it out of the state. But do you see an increase in enforcement? Do you make recommendations to enforcement, or is that strictly their call when they start doing checks on hunters and maybe writing some citations to get people more motivated than just by the fact that it's a good thing to keep out of the state?
Well, in enforcement, obviously, they've put a focus and commitment towards it, too. It is somewhat a difficult regulation to enforce, especially if meat's in an ice chest and, you know, the vehicle itself is just another vehicle on the roadway. But they are aware of the risk that it poses. It is something that we've discussed with them, and they are very aware and supportive of our regulation and feel that they'll do, you know, what they're able to do to enforce it. Last year was the first year of the regulation. It was more of an educational time, at which time if someone was not in compliance, then they were simply made aware of that regulation. Of course, the meat at that point, it had to be in the form that was required, so they weren't going to be allowed to keep a carcass or keep anything that would pose risk. That would have been confiscated and incinerated. And hopefully that led to, you know, some education, some additional education, and spread from word of mouth from hunter to hunter. But it appears hunters are pretty aware of it. Of course, there's always going to be a segment that will ignore it because it does create maybe an extra step for them or something that they perceive as a burden. And because of that, you know, they may choose to ignore that regulation and take their chances. And we hope that our enforcement section can catch up to those folks.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jonathan, thanks for your visit this morning and the wealth of information you provide for us. This will not be our last visit, I can tell you that. As you well know, this is going to be an ongoing situation that we'll have to deal with. And as things change or progress or get better or worse, we'd love to get you back on anytime that happens.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you, Don.
Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate it. All right, Jonathan Bordelon, Wildlife and Fisheries Department. There you have it, the latest story on CWD. Coming up from 8 to 9, outdoor writers Keith Lusher and Wendy Billiott and I will further discuss CWD and some of the attitudes that are being displayed by folks in not just this state, but some of the others. All right, we've got a quick break to take and come back and maybe catch a duck hunting report. Boy, it's been dismal for the opening morning of the second split. Hopefully that will change. We'll be right back after this. And welcome back in to More Outdoors. Glad to have you with us on this opening day of the second split of duck season, although not a lot to celebrate about so far. Let's check back in the blind of Captain Ryan Lambert, Cajun Fishing Adventures. And, Ryan, I got to tell you, you won't have to have killed many ducks to become the top blind on this radio show this morning. Things are pretty bleak all over the state right now.
Oh, yeah. I've talked to people from Delacroix that said they had videos from yesterday. They had looked like blackbirds in the sky. There's so many birds, and they never shot their gun. Main pass never shot their gun. I got a pintail and a gadwall. Manuel got 10. CJ got 7. Joe's got a few. Cody don't have any. Renee's got 2. It's pretty bad. They're just not flying at all.
You know, I was talking to one of the guys in Delacroix, and he's thinking that the birds are beginning – well, they've done it for a while, but getting more and more prevalent where they sit offshore. And that's kind of the development you've had down there by you.
Well, that's everywhere. You know, and I told him yesterday when they called me and told me all those birds were there, they were so good. I said, don't let it fool you, because I'm looking at the numbers. And when I went offshore, the birds weren't offshore. I checked them. They're all in the marsh. Tomorrow, with all the pressure from yesterday, with everybody running around, they were going to go back in the bay. So you just got to wait for them to come in and feed in order to kill them. You know, it's just how we hunt. Have to wait for windy days, incoming tides. The pressure, I ran 3 people off the leash this morning already. It's crazy, the pressure with people just running around with these boats. Because, I mean, the marsh was full of birds yesterday everywhere. But that was all the birds from, you know, offshore. 2 weeks of rest.
This kind of crazy system we had with this persistent southwest wind, I don't think that's helping any either.
No, it's west, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. You know, it's just tide. The tide is up and good. The birds ought to be here. I mean, yesterday when they were here, big numbers. We had tons. We must have 5 inches of rain down here. But the birds, where Cody's sitting there, the 1,000 birds yesterday, he hadn't shot. And then when he went into his body, had somebody sitting in it. So,
he's not having the greatest opening day of the second split, I would say.
No, he's not having the whole season for Cody's been bad. He's in a slump.
We got to get him out of that, man. We got to get him out of that. Yeah, well, Ryan, thanks for the reports. As always, bleak as they are, hope things change. And, hey, we'll be back at it again next week. I know you will, too.
As they fly, I'll be here to get them.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
All right. See you.
There he goes. Well, I got to tell you, it's not been the best. I wish we had a little bit more time. We could have got a hold of Kirk Stansel. I would put my money on those guys over there in the southwest part of the state in Cameron Parish. He was hunting that Hackberry Marsh, he told us. I would think that they probably would be doing is better than most, and maybe the best report that we have got. Didn't sound too bad up in North Louisiana with Blake Swallow. He said there were a lot of birds around, but I don't think they had gotten many shots in. But it's just puzzling that some of these prime areas where, you know, historically hold a lot of ducks, and they were actually seen within the last couple of days, and just didn't quite get it done. Well, coming up in the next hour, we're going to be joined by outdoor writers. In fact, president of Louisiana Outdoor Writers Association, Wendy Billiott, the Bayou Woman. Also, Keith Lusher, who hosts the North Shore Fishing Report. We're going to continue our discussion about CWD. Not so much the science behind it, but the attitudes of states and hunters with regard to this disease. And that's the subject of my opinion poll question. If you go to my website, DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com, and we're asking you, how serious are you taking it? Are you taking it very seriously? Jonathan Bordelon told us that some places 40 to 50% of the deer herd was infected in places where it's been for 4 decades. That doesn't sound too nonchalant and shouldn't be taken with a grain of salt. That's serious business. And yet some people are saying, ah, it's no big deal. It's been here a while. The deer are going to survive this, and there'll always be deer to hunt. What is your attitude? Cast that vote on my webpage at DonTheOutdoorsGuy.com. We're also going to talk a little bit about last-minute Christmas gift ideas for the sportsman maybe on your list. And also, I'm going to tell you, we're going to have a special visit not far from where we're broadcasting. We're at the Log Cabin in Fountain Blue State Park. The big fat guy with the white beard and the red suit, he's going to be not far away from here. It might be a good opportunity to take the kids to have a little chat with him. We'll tell you where and how to do that. Also, I am kind of flabbergasted by this Alabama. They are probably the state. We take it serious here in Louisiana, but, boy, they are writing citations. They're spending money on billboards on their interstate. They are really concerned about keeping CWD out of the state of Alabama. And what do you think? Will it eventually get into these states, or is it possible to keep it from coming in? We'll talk all about CWD coming up next right here on More Outdoors.